Okay.
You also record your own lectures?
No, that's for Rivka. Okay. Hey, good morning, everybody. Hope you had a wonderful Purim. I hope, I like to walk around. I don't know how easy it's going to be. Okay. Anyway, I hope everyone had a nice Purim, whichever day that you celebrated. And hopefully you had both days of Purim. And as you know, right in my neighborhood, we had our share of unfortunate incidents of an attempted terrorist attack in which up to three or five, I've seen two reports, five border police were injured. It seems that, Baruch Hashem, it will not be that serious, although it's always something of concern. And a very alert bystander, not even the police, managed to shoot the terrorist and take him out of commission. So even on Purim itself, we were zocha to a little bit of a Yeshua, and may it be so that all the enemies of Hashem and the enemies of Am Yisrael should have a permanent downfall and destruction, and Purim should once again be the Pesach for a Geula and a Yeshua, leading, of course, to Nisan, the month of Geula, the month of redemption, the month in which, of all of the months, it is most likely that Mashiach will come, although Mashiach can come every single day, but Nisan is the month that is set aside for the month of redemption. That is why the Gemara, in fact, tells us that when you have two Adars, we observe Purim, of course, in Adar Sheni. And there's a discussion in the Gemara, why is that so? Why not Adar Rishon? And the short answer is that we always want to connect Purim to be as close to Pesach as possible. So we'd rather have it Adar Sheni to connect the Geula of Purim to the Geula of Pesach instead of Adar Rishon, which would be 2 months before Pesach. Anyway, to go back a little bit, you know, we read yesterday Parshas Kisisa, and Parshas Kisisa is the makor, is the source of the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel. Now, what's interesting is that there are three different mitzvahs of giving half a shekel. By the way, half a shekel was a certain weight of silver. It was much, much more than half a shekel of Israeli currency. They translate, based on the weight of silver, a half shekel would be between $6 and $8. So that would be, let's say, 26 shekel. Although to be Mekayim, the Zecher Lemikdash of Machzis HaShekel, you could actually get by with an Israeli half shekel. But some people are Mahader to actually give the silver weight, or the equivalent and monetary value of the silver weight, which would be much more. But okay. And then you multiply that by 3 for each person in the household, so it could actually add up a little bit. Although, the Mishnah Berurah says, you can kill 2 birds with 1 stone, and if the Machzis HaShekel money will be distributed to the poor on Purim, you could also fulfill Matanos Lev Yonim with the Machzis HaShekel. So technically, it does not have to be 2 separate donations. But let me just say that the mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel has 3 separate components. It's not at all simple what this mitzvah was. Component number 1 was an annual mitzvah. Every single year when there was a Beis HaMikdash, only when there was a Beis HaMikdash, you were obligated to give a half shekel, which was the operating budget for the korbanos, right? The tamid, the musaf, the ketores, all of these items cost money, and they were purchased with the half shekel that every person gave. Now, there was a rule in halacha. It's very similar to the rule, I don't know about the Israeli government, but I know in the American government, all departments are very anxious to spend. If they have any extra leftover money at the end of their fiscal year, they have to spend it. Because if they don't spend it, they're going to get that much less the next year. So they have to spend it. You cannot carry over old money from one fiscal year to a new fiscal year. Well, Lahavdil, there's the identical rule in the Beis HaMikdash. The fiscal year of the Beis HaMikdash begins Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It is a Nisan to the end of Adar fiscal year. And starting from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, all korbanos must be purchased from newly collected money. You cannot use old money in the temple treasury. It has to be newly collected money. And in fact, the Mishnah gives us all sorts of rules. What do we do with leftover shkalim? Let's say korbanos were cheap that year, and we have leftover money. We cannot use it to buy new korbanos. So there's actually all sorts of rules. You can use it to fix streets, repair potholes, you know, build mikvahs. There are rules regarding what you use surplus money. In fact, those of you with an accounting background, if you want to know halachic principles of cost accounting, you can look in Maseches Shkalim, and it actually tells you the different rules for surpluses and deficits and the like. So, starting from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the Korban Tamid of the morning of Rosh Chodesh Nisan must be an animal that was purchased from newly collected money. Can't use old money. As a result, by the time Rosh Chodesh Nisan came around, there had to have been some money that was newly collected for that year, and that is why the Mishnah tells us they started collecting the Machzis HaShekel for the new year 1 month before Rosh Chodesh Adar. Now, that doesn't mean everybody gave. People, just like, you know, with your own taxes, people pay at different times during the year. Huh? No, before Rosh Chodesh Adar. Because by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, there had to be some money in the Pushka already. So they had to begin collecting a month before, in order that by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, there would be some money in the Beis HaMikdash. And this is the idea that on the first of Adar, we would announce for Shkolim, and this is why today, Zecher LeMikdash, only Zecher LeMikdash, it's a minhag, we read on the either Rosh Chodesh Adar, if it falls out on Shabbos, to go back a little bit, or the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar, we read about the Machzis HaShekel, because that is when they would make an announcement. Now, initially, we make announcements. If you give the money, that's fine. Later on in the year, if you still haven't given your money, based and used more coercive methods, such as seizing property and the like. This was an enforceable tax. This was a real tax in which compulsion could be used if you did not pay voluntarily. But that's later on in the year. And the purpose of this annual Machzis HaShekel was to purchase the animals and the flour and the oil and the incense that would be used for what are called korbanos tzibor. Korbanos tzibor are communal offerings. Now, if I want to bring my own individual korban, I'm perfectly at that kind of pocket. But the korbanos tzibor are funded by the tzibor through the collection of Machzis HaShekel. And in fact, we would not accept private donations. You know, in yeshivas, you have probably maybe the OU as well, although I don't see it. Well, we sponsor a shir. Right? We'll sponsor a shir here, for example. Or a yeshiva will have Parnes Hayom, the one that bought the learning for that day. Well, in the Beis HaMikdash, there would be no such sign. You couldn't say, Avram Schwartz purchased the Avoda today. Doesn't work. Every single day of the Avoda has to be a communal effort of Am Yisrael. And that's through the Machzis HaShekel. Now that is one mitzvah. That is an annual mitzvah of Machzis HaShekel. But there was another Machzis HaShekel, same coin. It was a one-time donation. It was not annual. It was a one-time donation towards the construction of the Mishkan. And that is, it was silver. The silver was melted and formed into two sockets called adanim. Now, if you remember, if you've seen pictures or you learned the Chumash, right, the Mishkan was comprised of very heavy boards, but the boards had two teeth looking like the prongs of a plug. And the way the boards were set up is there were silver sockets. Imagine it looked somewhat like a concrete block, except it was silver, right, in which each tooth was inserted into one socket, and that held the boards in place. And when the Mishkan was, it was like the foundation of the Mishkan, and when the Mishkan was disassembled, the Levim would pull the boards out of the sockets, and the boards would be loaded onto wagons. Remember, the Aron and the Mizbeach was carried on the shoulders. But the boards and the adanim, very heavy, they were put on wagons, right? And that's how the Mishkan would be transported. And when they got to the new location, they would put down the adanim, they would put the krashim are the boards, into the adanim. So the adanim were made from the half shekels that were melted down. Now that was a one-time thing, that was a one-time donation for the construction of the Mishkan. In fact, it's a bit of an anomaly. I'm not going to give you a complete answer to this. And that is, the actual mention of the half shekel in Parshas Kisisa is not referring to the annual mitzvah. It is referring to the one-time mitzvah. And that is what we read, Parsha Shkalim. Now you may say, well, but if Parsha Shkalim is to commemorate the annual mitzvah, why don't I read the part that deals with the annual mitzvah? The answer is, because there is no part that deals with the annual mitzvah. The annual mitzvah is derived from a drasha, but it is not explicit in the Chumash. So we do the best that we can. We want to read about a half shekel, so I read about the only half shekel that's exactly discussed in the Torah, and that's the Trumas Ha'adanim, and the half shekel every year, which is actually what I'm commemorating, that refers to, that's only learned out of a drasha. Now that is the second halacha, and I'm going to talk about both of them. So the first is the annual Machtis HaShekel that goes to the operating budget, so to speak. And the second is the one-time Machtis HaShekel that goes to the building fund that was melted down for the Adonim. And that, again, was an obligation. A third component of all of this is really a separate halacha, and that is the Machtis HaShekel, both of them, serve two different functions. They serve the function in the Mishkan and the Mikdash, Korbanos and Adonim, but they also served a function of counting Am Yisrael. They were a census device. And there is a halacha that Jewish people are not allowed to be counted by heads. They have to be counted indirectly. In the Midbar, the Machtis HaShekel was the vehicle for the indirect counting of Am Yisrael. But you see from Tanakh that it didn't always have to be Machtis HaShekel. For example, when Shaul HaMelech was assembling an army and he wanted to count how many people were able to fight, so one pasuk, in one war, he counted them with pebbles. In another war, he counted them with sheep. So in other words, the third component of Machtis HaShekel is the only component that really doesn't require a Machtis HaShekel. It's simply a sign that counting Jewish people should always be indirectly. You don't do a head count, because the Torah is merames that when people are counted by their individual selves, that brings an ayin hara, that brings a midas adin, an attribute of justice on the world that God forbid could punish people. In fact, there's a whole discussion we find at the end of Shmuel that because David HaMelech counted people directly, there was a magefa, there was a plague, many people died, and the Ramban actually explains, how could David HaMelech even make such a mistake? Yeah.
Isn't the half shekel only for males over the age of 20? What about women, children?
Yeah, so in the Midbar itself, you are correct, in the Midbar itself, the Machtis HaShekel was only for men age 20 and up. And women and children were simply part of the family unit. So you can almost look at it as it was a family donation. God forbid, it's not that women didn't have a share in the service, but they were considered to be connected to the existing family unit. Now, whether that applies today in the Zecher Lamikdash is a machlokas. A machlokas haposkim, whether women should give, whether kids below 20, between 13 and 20 should give. There are different minhagim about that, but you are correct that it technically applied to 20 up. Now, there's a whole question, I don't want to get into all the halakhah, but there's a whole question about responding to a census. Right? In the United States, there's a census every 10 years. I guess Israel has a census as well. I don't know how many years, how often it is. And you may know that some Haredim do not respond to a government census. Now, some of it is political. If obviously, if your shita is you don't recognize the state of Israel, you know, you're not going to respond to anything they do. But some have a halachic issue, and the halachic issue is that when you respond to a census, you're counting how many people are in your family, and it is prohibited to count people in a direct way. But the emes is, most poskim say that there is no halachic objection to responding to a census, because a census is not a head count. I mean, how does the government tabulate? The government adds forms, adds numbers on forms. I write down on a form, let's say there are 4 people, and someone else writes down there are 10 people, and someone else writes down there are 5 people. The government is not going into, in fact, for care, if you don't respond to the census, there may be a head count. The government might come in and start counting. But if all the government is doing is tabulating numbers on a piece of paper, that's not a head count. That's the same principle as counting shkalim and the like. So based on that idea, generally speaking, putting aside the political issues of how one relates to the Medina, there would be no problem per se in responding to a census. But so that's not the one I want to talk about, but I do want to talk about the two aspects of Machzus HaShekel. One is the annual donation towards the Korbanos, and the other is the one-time donation that goes to the Adanim, the sockets, and what all of that represents. Because they do represent two different ideas, and both ideas are very, very significant as we go through Purim and as we approach Pesach. Let's take the first idea of the Machzus HaShekel as the Korbanos Tzibur. So the two things that are most blatant about the Machzus HaShekel is, first, the Torah insists that it be uniform. The Torah says, He'ashir lo yarbe, the rich person cannot give more, Hadal lo yamit, the poor person cannot give less. You are not allowed to give less, you're not allowed to give more. Now, I understand why you can't give less. You know, a shul or yeshiva, we have minimum tuition, you gotta give your dues. But who on earth ever heard of such a rule? You're not allowed to give more? If somebody wants to give more to a yeshiva, somebody wants to give more to a shul, we don't take it, we say, I'm sorry. You know, somebody wants to offer, I can speak for Samarichli, somebody wants to offer $1 million, assuming there were no improper conditions attached. Sometimes, of course, you know the famous story. Somebody once offered the Panovich a Rav a large sum of money for Panovich on the condition that the Talmidim who study there don't have to wear kippot. He was mocking the Rav and says, if they don't have to wear kippot, they don't have to wear yarmulkes or hats. So he took the money and he built a Beis Yaakov with it. You know, so there are ways out if you're the Panovich Rav and the like. But assuming there's no improper condition, I'll take whatever money you offer. Every yeshiva would. And yet, when it comes to the service of the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem says the rich can give no more than the poor. And there's a very profound lesson in that. Rich and poor, the Mefarshim tell us, do not only refer to money. Yeah, there are people who are wealthy in money, people who are less wealthy in money. But rich and poor refer to the entire distribution of talents that Hashem puts into the world. There are people that are rich in wisdom, people who are less rich in wisdom. Charisma, whatever the quality would be. The ability to influence people, the ability to create things. So some people are rich, some people are poor. But in terms of their ability to serve God, their ability to have the dignity of standing in front of Hashem in the Avodas Beis HaMikdash, every single person stands before the Ribono Shel Olam with equality of dignity and worthiness. Now, what do I mean? Am I saying that Tzaddik and the Rasha are exactly the same? Surely not. But here is the Nakuda. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu evaluates our life is not by how we compare somebody else. The way HaKadosh Baruch Hu evaluates our life is how much of what we were given have we given back to Him. So if a person might be an ani vis-a-vis somebody else, but he's giving to Hashem whatever he's able to give, he stands before Hashem with the same chashivas, the same status, the same dignity as a greater person, as an ashir. Because just as they say with the marathon racer, marathon racers claim that they are not competing against other people. They are only competing against themselves. So too, the only person we're competing against is ourselves. We're trying to become better. We're trying to develop our talents. We're trying to take the gifts that Hashem gave us. And the fact that somebody else has different gifts or different talents, that does not affect me one iota. And that is the secret of the Machtes HaShekel. That when it comes to Avodas Hashem, the Ashir and the Ani, in whatever sense they are, stands before HaKadosh Baruch Hu with equality of dignity, equality of access, equality of status. Because how you are measured by God is how much of your talents are you pledging to His service, as opposed to objectively how much your talents happen to be. That's a separate cheshbon. Every person has a mission. Every person has a goal. Every person has a role that is unique to them, by the way. It's hard for us to imagine. But, you know, each of us, we have a tachlis in life that was not fulfilled even by, I don't want to say Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu may be a different case because he may include all of the neshamas, but the Chafetz Chaim, let's say, or some great, great gadol. There is something that we have. I mean, there's a lot they had that we don't have, to be sure. But what is even, what's a bit stranger is, there's something we have that they don't have. And that is the lesson of Machtes HaShekel. We stand before God with equality of dignity and significance as long as we do the best with whatever tools HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. That's a great, great message. The Ashir is no better than the Ani. If the Ashir gave even in terms of money, right? For the Ani who gives a dollar, that might be more than the Ashir who gives $1 million. So each person does the best that they can. They stand before Hashem with the same chashivas. This is one message of the Machtes HaShekel. There is a second message of them. Again, I'm talking right now about the Machtes HaShekel of Korbanos. The Adonim, I'm going to give you a different pshat. But in the Machtes HaShekel of the Korbanos, there are two messages. Message number one is equality of dignity and significance, which is a great chizuk for a person. And that in turn creates unity, because so much disunity comes from jealousy, depression. I look at other people and they say, they have this, they have this, they have this. But if a person recognizes that whatever they were given in life is equally beloved by Hashem, as long as they use it, there is no reason to have jealousy or sinas chinam. And the second message of Machtes HaShekel is a well-known thought, and that is interdependence. Well, why do you give a half shekel, not a whole shekel? So the Sifrei Chassidus say, because a half does not become a whole until it is linked to something else. And therefore there's a remez that each of us need each other. Therefore, my Avodas Hashem is incomplete unless I link and connect this to you. But that's also a message how important I am. And your Avodas Hashem is not complete unless you link to me. Meaning each person recognizes, number one, how much they need the other, but number two, how much the other needs them. So the two messages are equality and interdependence. And that in turn is a great conducive factor to Avas Yisrael, taking away jealousy, each person understanding their role in the world. You know, what do they say? Some mashal about some people are bananas and some people are oranges and some people are tomatoes. But it doesn't behoove the tomato to be jealous that it's not an orange. The tomato has to be the best tomato it could be. And there's a lot of wasted energy when we're kind of wishing and thinking we would be somebody else, when in fact what we are is sufficiently special and good that this is what Hashem chose to make. Right? Hashem chose to make the person that each of us are. Apparently HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a need for that person. Rav Bunim of Prisitska once said that if he would be given a choice to switch places with Avraham Avinu, he says he wouldn't take it, because what would Hashem get from the deal? There would still be one Avraham Avinu, one Rav Bunim. So he's only doing it for ego? I want to be Avraham Avinu. He says, what's the toelis? But the achrayas is, right, to be Rabbunim, to be Rav Zusha, it's another story. Rav Zusha says, I'm not going to be asked, why wasn't I Avram? Why wasn't I Moshe? Why wasn't I David HaMelech? I'm not afraid of that. I could give plenty of answers for that. But when I'm going to be asked, why wasn't I Zusha? That's going to scare me. Yeah.
Go back to the sensei that they had in the Midbar. The one you're talking about with the Mishkan, is that the way... I know that when they first got out of Mitzrayim, they had one census.
Yeah.
And then right before they entered to Canaan, they had another census. And those were, the focus of those two censuses were to see how many males between 20 and 60 were eligible to fight.
Right.
Did they use the Machzor HaShekel for that? Are these separate censuses than the one you're talking about with the Mishnah?
Yeah, here's the thing. The Torah records, okay, let me just say, the Torah records two Sensei, that's correct, that is the Latin. And Rashi says, however, there were three, although one is not recorded. The two that are recorded is at the beginning of the book of Bamidbar, which is 1 month after the Mishkan was dedicated. And that's the beginning of the second year. They counted the people. And the next one is 40 years later, right before they enter the land, and the old generation had died because of the spies, they counted the people again. That's the Benos Salavchad. Those are the two. Now, Rashi, now, those two were done, according to Rashi, through the half shekel annual contribution. However, Rashi says there is...
The purpose of that last one was for the military.
Yeah, different reasons. Which people will get shares in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, there are a number of reasons. Military purposes, which families will get the share of the land, and the like. And it's interesting, you know, you can sit down with a Chumash and compare the numbers, because although the total of Am Yisrael is almost exactly the same, but there are very significant changes in individual tribes. Some tribes grew enormously, and some Shvatim shrunk enormously. So it's very interesting to discuss why there were those differences. Now, according to that, the two census that are recorded were not from the Adonim, because they were after the Mishkan was built. But Rashi says there was a third, actually it's the first one, that there was a census before the ones that were recorded, and this was after Yom Kippur, after the sin of the golden calf, and Hashem wanted to destroy the Jewish people, and Moshe Rabbeinu comes down on Yom Kippur with the second Luchos, and that's when Hashem forgave the Chet HaEgel, right? That's why, it's an interesting cause and effect. Did Hashem forgive the Egel because it was Yom Kippur? Or did that day become Yom Kippur because that's when Hashem forgave the Chet HaEgel? Like, there is a chicken and egg problem about the relationship between Yom Kippur and the Chet HaEgel. But however you understand the relationship, it was Yom Kippur that the Chet HaEgel was forgiven. And immediately after Yom Kippur, people started donating to the Mishkan, including the first half shekel that was melted down. Rashi says there was a census at that point in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel. That is an unrecorded census. So according to Rashi, there are two censi in the Torah explicitly, and according to Rashi, there's a third unrecorded census. That was the earliest one. And Rashi explains that census was an expression of God's love for Am Yisrael, that just as God forbid if there would be a tragedy you know, you would want to count, you know, your money, count your children, to be sure. So Hashem wanted to show his love for Am Yisrael that after the calamity of the Chedo Egel, he wanted to count how many are, I mean, Hashem knew, of course, but symbolically, he wanted to show his love for Am Yisrael, how precious they were by counting them, right? So, you're raising a good point. But the other two, Rashi says, were through the half shekel contribution. That is correct. Okay, yeah. Yes. In other words, according to Rashi, the order is this. Census number one was through the half shekel of the Adonim, and that was after Yom Kippur, between Yom Kippur and the Mishkan building. When people gave the silver, they were counted. That is not, now, the half shekel contribution is in the Torah, but the Torah does not say specifically that they would be counted, but Rashi says they were counted at that point. The second counting is after the Mishkan was built. The Mishkan was dedicated Nisan of the second year, Rosh Chodesh Iyar of the second year, 1 month later, the beginning of the book of Bamidbar. They were counted. And then the third one is 40 years later in Parshas Pinchas, after the whole generation of the spies
so
had...
Does that symbolize the Abba Hashem was the second or the third?
Which one?
Well,
Rashi says they're all Chiba, but the Chiba is for different reasons. Rashi says the Chiba in the aftermath of the Egel is Leida Minyan Hanosarim, to know how many are left, as if God is cherishing every Jew that's alive. The Minyan at the beginning of Bamidbar is also Derech Chiba Lahashros Shechinaso Aleim, when he's coming to put his Shechina on Am Yisrael by the Mishkan. Okay, alright. Now, we'll talk about it, because again, Machzor HaShekel, there's a lot to talk about. In fact, I'll probably say something even next week about it. But let me just say a little bit about the Adonim. Now, the Adonim raises a very interesting question. The Adonim was not part of the Korbanos. The Adonim was a one-time contribution towards construction. So here is the question that one could ask. When it comes to construction of the Mishkan, normally everybody gave whatever they wanted to give. There was no uniformity. People gave gold, silver, copper, techeles, blue wool, argaman, scarlet wool. In other words, unlike the operating budget where everyone gave equal, when it comes to the donation of the Mishkan, everybody gave what they wanted. With one exception, the Adonim of the foundations have to be based on uniformity. So the question you could ask is, why is the Adonim, or why were the Adonim treated differently than every other part of the Mishkan in which there's a mandatory donation that you have to do? So here, Ber Yosef, one of the great Bali Musar, says the following idea. There's a Gemara in Makos, a very interesting Gemara in Makos, that said, you know, Hashem gave us, of course, 613 mitzvot, 365 negative, 248 positive, okay? But in later generations, it was too difficult to put their head, so to speak, around 613. They couldn't keep them all in their mind. Excuse me. So the different generations try to reduce, now not to reduce the mitzvos, but to try to give you principles by which you'd have only a few principles, and by those principles you could remember and internalize all of the mitzvos. So David HaMelech got it down to 11. Micha, as the generations got lower, got it down to 3. Actually, these are a famous 3. I think they're on the National Archives in Washington, D.C., Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Mimach, what does God ask of you? Kiyem Asos Mishpat, to do justice. Avas Chesed, to love kindness. Hatznei Aleches Im Hashem Elokecha, and to walk with Hashem with humility, humbleness, modesty. And In the context, it's absolutely clear that the word tznias is not a reference to the length of skirts or whatever it is. It is referring to a fundamental attitude of life, to walk with humility. Those are the big three. But even three was too much. Yeshayahu got it down to two. Shimru mishpat. Do mishpat. Asay tzedakah. Give charity. It's interesting. The one that more or less corresponds to Micha, the first two, Shimru Mishpat Avas Chesed, but the one he dropped was Hatznei Aleches. It's interesting. That's the one that he dropped. So I'll give you two explanations for that. One is, as the Doros got weaker and weaker, so people needed the incentive of showing off a little bit. Meaning to say, you know, in the olden days I could say, do mitzvahs, nobody has to know. But in a generation where people were not so holy, you know, they needed the shalom l'shma a little bit of getting kavod and the like. That would put it in a negative light, meaning, okay, better to do a mitzvah as a show-off than not to do a mitzvah at all. Okay? That is the makor of honoring banquet, you know, the whole idea of, I don't know, do they do it in Eretz Yisrael? I haven't gotten so many invitations to banquets. Or at least all the yeshivas in Israel have their banquets in America, so maybe that's it. But every banquet in America, there always has to be, you know, the guests of honor, everyone has to be honored all the time, etc. Okay, now, there's another reason, though, which is actually an important idea, even for a tzaddik, and that is, although in an ideal way, in an ideal sense, one should do mitzvos very, very modestly, very humbly, but in a generation where people need to be inspired, it is sometimes your achrayus, your responsibility, to be a little conspicuous in your avodas Hashem, so that others will learn from your example. Okay, that's an important idea.
That's why they hate you to be honored.
That's correct. And that's exactly why even people who are very, very esteemed and very modest. Well, that's the trick. 100% correct. That's you know, we rabbis learned that trick a long time ago. That's how you get people to be honored. You have to do it for the community. Right. That's right. But that's emes. He said Rabbi Saul Solantra, as a young man, when he was, this was the early 1800s. This is the early 19th century. So in Lita, there were people, in Lithuania, there were people who were, we would call them hermits. They were Prussian. They would be in the forest, they would be away from their families, nobody knew about them. They spent all of their time serving Hashem with privacy. They weren't involved in anything. Rabbi Saul Solantra was very, very attracted to that derech of avodas Hashem, in which all of your learning is private, all of your mitzvahs are private. But he then realized that for him would be a mistake. Because in a generation where so many people are going away from Hashem, you have to be involved in showing people mitzvos and Torah. You can't just focus on what's best for you. What's best for you is indeed to be totally private. Totally private. We wouldn't think that. We would think for the kavod, you know. No, what's best for you, for us, is to be totally unknown. But a person has a certain responsibility to help others. So that means maybe that when you say a bracha, you say, right, let's take it even on a smaller scale, your own children. Okay? So, you know, some people, when they make brachos, they like to make brachos nice and loud. Sometimes it's a little, you know, it's a little conspicuous sometimes. Chocolate everywhere, you know, etc. And, you know, okay, I have to say, I'm not a great fan of it, but that's a chisaron in me. So let's say you're with your kids, right? So how do you do these things? You know, do you kind of say it quietly? No, there is an inyan. Your children should see that you make brachas with enthusiasm. So even though it may make you a little uncomfortable, you may even feel like why am I showing off in front of my five-year-old? Like, you know, what am I supposed to do? But, you know, you have to show off a little bit. You have to do mitzvahs. Your child has to see that, you know, preparing for Shabbos is a great thing, and cleaning for Pesach. You know, if you need to complain, don't do it in front of the kids. You know, go outside and hit a tree or whatever, hit a punching bag or something. But don't do it in front of the kids. The kids should see, oh, Baruch Hashem, cleaning for Pesach, greatest, you know, so much geschmack, etc. So sorry, I understand it's not always the easiest thing to to feel. But that idea, that's what I'm suggesting, is why Yeshayahu omits Hatznei Aleches. Because as the door gets weaker and weaker and weaker, you sometimes need to be a little less sanua in how you serve Hashem, because you need to be a positive role model for your children and for others, for other people that you encounter. Even if personally you would rather be reticent, you would rather be private, and indeed, in a spiritual sense, it's better to be private. It actually is better, but sometimes you have to go out a little bit. Now they say, there was one person, Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkelzatzal, his father-in-law, Rav Beinish Finkel, who was the son of Rav Leiz Yehuda, was actually a total, he really was an Ishtar, he was Rosh Yeshiva of Mir, but I guess people knew he was Rosh Yeshiva of Mir, that was his job, but he didn't even like to have people see him learn. It says he used to stay up all night, Friday night, and learn, but he always had a newspaper with him in the kitchen. So if anybody got up in the middle of the night, he put the Gemara under the tablecloth and put out the newspaper and says, "Can't sleep, so I'm reading the paper." He went almost to an extreme that nobody should know. I mean, people knew. I mean, he couldn't keep it to himself. But he perhaps was an extreme derech of trying to be a nister. But all right, but for most of us, we have to be willing to go out a little for our privacy. Okay. All right. So we went from 6:13 to 11, I skipped some intermediate, to 3, to 2. But even 2, too much to remember. Can't remember 2 things. So Habakkuk the Navi got everything down to one principle. If you're only going to know one thing in life, this is what you got to know. And this is the pasuk, Tzadik B'emunaso yichya. A righteous person lives with emuna, faith in God. That is it. That is what it means to be a Jew. That I maimin, I believe, I internalize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that not only gave me life, but is involved in my life, that takes care of me, that loves me, that nurtures me, that guides me. And no matter what happens in life, sometimes it's easy, and sometimes it's hard, and sometimes it's challenging, and sometimes I don't understand what's happening. And sometimes I wonder why such suffering might exist. But if I have emunah, that will give me the strength to weather every storm, and that will give me the desire to find out how to serve Hashem. Right, that is emunah. So, going back to the Adonim, here is what the Ber Yosef says. He says, every single person builds a mishkan with their lives. Right? All you all know the famous song. Of course, the words are taken from the Sefer Charedim. Bilvavi mishkon evne. In my heart, I will build a dwelling place for the Almighty. Our job is to make our lives a mishkan for Hashem. But everybody's mishkan is different. Everybody, as we said with the first lesson of Machzis HaShekel, your talents are different, your abilities are different, the way you serve Hashem is different. So as a result, the Torah cannot say for every part of the mishkan, everybody gives the same. Everybody gives different because everybody is different. Gold, silver, techeles, they all need it. But even if everybody builds a different mishkan, the foundation must be a common foundation. And Ber Yosef says, the common foundation, the Adonim, is a reference to Emuna. And therefore, that is why every part of the Mishkan is unique, individualized, tailor-made, different. But it rests on the common foundation of Emuna, and that is why it's a machzis. Why is that? So the first, remember, keep in mind the two ideas here. In the machzis HaShekel of Korbanos, I had mentioned the idea of half connotes interdependence. I'm incomplete unless I link myself up to others. But in the Adonim, there's a different message. That the yesod of emuna is to understand we only know half of the story. Because when a human being feels that I understand the whole picture, then they're going to have a lot of complaints on the Ribbono Shel Olam. Why did it, in other words, you're judging Hashem by our limited understanding. Why do people suffer? Why was there a Holocaust? Why is there cancer? Why do children have AIDS? And if I think things have to make sense according to my perception, I can't have emuna. The yesod of emuna is to understand. I don't really know the whole story. If I saw the shleimus, in fact, that's why shalom and shalem are related. Shalem means completeness. Shalom means peace. When you see the whole story, which until Mashiach we will not see, then there will be inner peace. And that's also true in human relationships. If I'm angry at somebody, it's usually because I don't see the whole picture. I don't see what they went through. I don't see their past. I don't see, and same with on that side. When there's a shlemus of vision, there will be shalom interpersonally as well. So this is why, number one, the machzis ha-shekel of the Adonim has to be uniform, because everybody builds their own mishkan, but it has to have a common foundation of emunah. This is why it is half, because emunah means I recognize the limits of my understanding. And of course, this is one of the big lessons of Purim, which is the time of concealment, in which the very gezeira of Haman was the catalyst that brought the Jewish people to tshuva. The tragedy of Haman is why we did tshuva and accepted the Torah out of love. And finally, let me mention one other point about the Adonim. You'll recall that the Shkolim were melted down and there were two sockets, two Adonim per Keresh. Why two Adonim? Because Emuna is a bifurcated, it's a twin concept. There is, first and foremost, Emuna in Hashem. But there is, secondarily, Emuna in yourself. Emuna that you are worthy and deserving of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes we can believe in Hashem. I believe in Hashem. But we might feel, who am I to be worthy of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? HaKadosh Baruch Hu surely rejects me, surely despises me, surely doesn't care. Doesn't he have better things to do with his time? And part of the idea of emuna is not only to believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam, but believe in one's own capacity for greatness, and believe in one's own capacity to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Hashem cherishes that relationship. You know, they say, it's a famous Hasidic word, although it's not grammatical, in Maida Ani, right? So we say, actually it's Pasuk in Eicha, Rabba Emunasecha, Hashem's faith is very great. It's actually part of a Pasuk in Eicha. And people ask the question that normally Emuna is what I believe in Hashem. So if I'm making the statement, my faith in Hashem is great, it should say, Rabba Emunasi. My faith in Hashem is great. Now, I want to point out that grammatically, that is not such a strong question. And the reason is, emuna in Tanakh does not mean faith. Emuna in Tanakh means faithfulness and dependability. In fact, even the word ma'amin actually means I ascribe to Hashem the quality of emuna. Hazinu, Hashem is described as kel emuna. What does it mean, kel emuna? It doesn't mean a God of faith, but a God that is faithful, reliable, dependable. You can depend, unlike, you know, Bnei Adam, right? That's David HaMelech says, Tov lach asos b'Hashem, miftolach b'Adam. It is better to seek refuge with Hashem than to trust in human beings. Kol Adam Kozev, David HaMelech said in his moments of despondency. And Kozev does not mean liar, but it means everybody is a disappointment. It's a little more of a realistic appraisal. They all disappoint. Hashem does not disappoint. So, that's why I'm saying, so grammatically it's not so much a pekasha. Rabba munasecha means your dependability is great. Okay, but as we say, in Hasidic thought you don't ask questions grammatically. And since colloquially we use emunah to refer to belief, so what do you mean, your belief is great? It should be my belief is great. My emunah is great. The answer is very beautiful. It is Hashem's emunah in us that is very great. That we lose faith in ourselves. Hashem does not lose faith in us. And the reason this is said in Moda Ani, because it's an amazing thing. God forbid a person could die in their sleep. Right? Every morning, we thank Hashem for giving us back our lives, giving us the ability to live. Every single morning that we open our eyes, and as the joke says, we check the obituaries and, you know, it's okay. Hashem is whispering in your ear, you can do it. You have a reason, you have a purpose. I believe in you. I trust you. Go out and do what you can do in this world to make the world a better world. So really, no matter how bad a person might feel, if the Ribbono Shel Olam allowed them to open their eyes that morning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has expressed his vote of confidence in the person. Who needs a better vote of confidence now? What can be a better seal of approval than the Ribbono Shel Olam? So, just to summarize it very, very quickly, the point I wanted to bring out today is that the Machtis HaShekel of the Korbanos is a different message than the Machtis HaShekel of the Adonim. The Machtis HaShekel of the Korbanos is a message that whether we're rich or poor, in whatever that means, we stand before Hashem with equality when it comes to serving Hashem in the Korbanos, and interdependence. By myself, I am incomplete and defective unless I link up. The Machtis HaShekel of Adonim is a lesson in emunah. Because on one hand, when it comes to every part of the Beis HaMikdash, we do our own thing. Everybody builds their own Beis HaMikdash. But the foundation has to be emunah. And in emunah, there are two components. One is the fact that it's a half shekel, the lesson. Emunah means I understand the limits of my knowledge. I only see half the story. And number two, the fact that the shkolim are bifurcated into two adonim, because emunah in God, emunah in my potential greatness to have a relationship with God. And without those two prongs of emunah, one is going to fail. And this is what Chazal say, that a person always has to have these two ideas with them at all times. One is anochi afor v'yefer, I am dust and ashes, meaning knowing how prone I am to failure. But the other is Bishvili Nivra Olam, because of Hashem made many dogs and many cats and many cows and many elephants, but only one man and one woman, as if to say the entire universe was made for only one person. Who is that person? Any one of us is that person. It would have been justified for any single person. And therefore it's our achrayas to kind of make Hashem's bria not be a waste. So anyway, wish you all a good week and stuff.
Thank you.